Every 10 seconds, a new small business is started. Every day, more and more people are deciding they want to be their own boss and making huge sacrifices to live out their dreams. Yet, they have no place to turn for support. Entrepreneurs of the world, unite and let's talk business.
This is Dr. Dennis Waitley. You're listening to Let's Talk Business, which I think is probably the most important show that you can listen to on becoming an entrepreneur in a fast-forward world.
The Let's Talk Business Network is dedicated to helping entrepreneurs and small business owners succeed. So get ready to be helped, informed, and inspired, because it's time for Let's Talk Business with veteran entrepreneur and a man who was voted one of the 100 most important talk show hosts, Mitch Schlimmer.
A fascinating show, a show in which I really always love to do, and that is a show that gets my listeners to think. And we have really a great entrepreneur joining us all the way from beautiful Vancouver, British Columbia, and that is Brian Scudmore. He is the founder and CEO of 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and we're going to talk to Brian and about his journey and learn all about not only entrepreneurship but franchising. And then following Brian is going to be Nick Tassler, and we're going to talk about his books, including The Impulse Factor and his latest book that's come out called Decision Pulse. And I tell you what, get that pad and pen ready. We always love for you to learn a lot during these shows. And we are going to start off, as I mentioned, with Brian Scudmore. And if you don't know Brian's journey, around the age of 18, he started his business 1-800-GOT-JUNK with about $700 and a beat-up old pickup truck. And as they say, the rest is history. They have, as a franchise system, you know, 1,000 trucks on the road throughout some 180 locations in Canada, the United States, and Australia. He has received a lot of recognition. Brian Ratt is an incredible entrepreneur, and he's been on Oprah Winfrey. He's been featured in Fortune Magazine, Business Week, The New York Times, and I can go on and on and on. Matter of fact, in 2004, he was actually inducted into the Young President Organization, and he served on their board as well. And he's got many other honors, including in 2007, he was honored and named the International Franchise Association Entrepreneur of the Year. And it is such an honor to have Brian here on Let's Talk Business. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mitch.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm awesome. I'm loving being an entrepreneur. It's been about 23 years now, so a little more than half my life, and I still love every moment.
Well, it's a glorious journey, as you and I both know, and you are based in one of my favorite areas of the world. It's a place I just love to visit and do some salmon fishing and just enjoy the beautiful scenery as well. But, Brian, we have a whole half hour here, and one of the things that I love to do and my listeners love to get is the journey of the entrepreneur. And then once we get a sense for Brian Scudmore and your journey, then we're going to get into what I kind of say is the meat of the interview. And I just can't wait for that as well. So let's go back when, as you would say, you know, 1989, 23 years ago, and talk a little bit about your journey and how you got to here.
Well, I was right out of high school. I was actually one course short of graduation. And I told my dad one day, I remember sitting down and I'm just said, Dad, school isn't working for me. I'm not having fun. It's not working for me. And I dropped out, which like some kids do, and parents kind of look at them and go, what is going on? It must be just that they're a teenager and one day they'll straighten themselves out. So I was in a McDonald's drive-thru of all places, and I was contemplating my future. I saw this beat-up old pickup truck in front of me, and it had plywood side panels built up on the box. It said Mark's Hauling on the side. And I looked at the truck and went, you know, I should get out and buy a truck and start hauling junk. It would be a great way to make some money. And I started to set my sights on college, thinking, well, if I didn't finish high school, I'm going to talk my way into college and make my parents happy. I don't know if I did it for me, but did it for my family. And went out and bought a pickup truck, $700, and spent a few hundred dollars on flyers and business cards and started driving down alleys and laneways. And when I saw someone had a pile of junk, I'd knock on their door, introduce myself, and offer to cart away their junk. And ironically, it paid for my education for university. But 3 years into my university education, I had that same conversation with my dad and said, listen, not having fun, not learning enough. I'm learning much more about business by running a business more than studying in school, and made the bold decision to drop out. This time I had a business, though, standing behind me and knew that my dad would ultimately understand.
Well, I try and imagine, you know, here you are talking to this, you know, well-respected, what you and I would call, obviously, a liver transplant surgeon, and his son is going to college, and he wants to go off and run his own business, and what that dynamic must have been like. But I have no doubt he is real proud today, Brian. And I thought maybe it'd be great for you to talk a little bit about what those first few years were like. As you and I know, you know, the first 8 years, you know, it takes you to do a million in sales, and you know, now you're doing a million in sales, you know, every, you know, few days or so. So why don't you talk a little bit about what those first few years are like and what entrepreneurs can expect when starting a business?
Yeah, Mitch, it actually took 8 years to do a million in revenue, and you're right. We do a million every couple of days at our busiest of times. Now, I guess what I didn't know going in was just how long it would take to build the business up. I was making money. I bought my first home in what seems to be one of the most expensive cities in the world today. I was just reading an article in the newspaper this morning that Vancouver is one of the most expensive, if not the most expensive English-speaking city in the world. Real estate values are just off the charts. But I bought my first home in 94 at the age of 24. So my business started to turn a profit at an early age, but it took a long time to get that revenue to really grow to a level that I felt proud of or motivated behind, which was $1 million. And I think entrepreneurs get out there and they often, you know, will even approach me, as I will approach mentors trying to learn. I'll get others approaching me saying, hey, Brian, how did you do this? What would you do if you did it all over again? And I think that new entrepreneurs want things to happen quickly. We're in the social media generation where everything just seems to happen so fast, but it still takes time to get out there and drive the revenue and make money. You have to have the patience. And as a new entrepreneur, as I was a complete rookie with no experience, that first 8 years, I was trying to figure everything out. How do I hire people? How do I fire people? In 1994, I fired my entire staff of 11 people because I realized I had the wrong people and had to make some tough decisions. How do you train people? How do you brand the business? How do you get PR? I knew nothing. And those first 8 years were really paramount, getting it to a million. And then once I started to figure out what is the system here that's working, how do I do customer service? How do I do my marketing? And starting to be consistent, things started to take off and really balloon.
Well, I tell you, it's such a fascinating time. And I've always said that if there's anything you get out of the journey of being an entrepreneur, is you'll learn more about yourself than probably any other venture that you will take on. And as I like to say, I've been an entrepreneur my whole life, which is over 3 decades. And it's a glorious, glorious life, Brian, as you and I know. But it is definitely filled with its ups and its downs and its challenges. But as we both know, you wouldn't want it any other way. And maybe just briefly, you could just talk about, you know, here you are, you know, running this business, and you decide that all the people you have, you really believe in your soul are not the right people at that time. You know, what was that like, having to get rid of all of 11 and hire others?
Well, I ripped the Band-Aid off pretty quickly. I said, okay, if I'm going to fire 11 people, I'm not going to waste anybody's time and do it one by one by one. I brought everyone into sort of a town hall meeting and said, I got some tough news for you. And when I made the decision, I knew 9 people were awful, and 2, you know, 1 bad apple spoils the whole bunch. The other 2 sort of, I thought, you know what, a fresh start's going to be best for everybody. So I took all 11 and said, listen, I got to start from scratch here. I didn't hire the right people, or if you guys are the right people, I didn't train you right. I didn't give you the support. I put all the onus on me, that the blame was solely to the leader, to myself, that I let you guys down and I'm sorry. I gave them their severance checks and said, you know, I wish you guys luck. And then I started from scratch. And I learned the lesson that day that it's all about people, hiring the right people and treating them right. we actually have, so for a company, I know you mentioned in the beginning, we have 1,000 trucks. Big mobile billboards all over North America and Australia. For such a heavily branded company as ourselves, when you walk into our head office, the junction, the first thing you see is not the logo. You see up on the wall a big, huge decal that says, it's all about people, with my name below it. And that's my commitment as the leader to also inspire and drive the rest of the company towards that one statement that we will always find the right people, treat them right. When we've got the wrong people on board, we make decisions to get them out. But we're so much more careful in who we bring on board now that the mistakes are a lot fewer and far between.
Well, I have to tell you, I have to commend you, because there are lots of entrepreneurs out there that have people that, matter of fact, as you and I know, you know, the people in the company know they need to go. And a matter of fact, when they go, the people in the company say, I wonder what took her or him so long to do that. But a lot of times they hold on to them. You know, they're friends and some of them are relatives and some of them have been with them a long time. But it does hold the company back. And those are some really, really tough decisions. Well, as we both know also, Brian, and again, listeners, you're listening to Let's Talk Business here. Hi, I'm Mitch Schlimmer, your host here on WREK 91.1 on your FM dial. And joining us all the way from beautiful Vancouver is the CEO, founder, and entrepreneur behind 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And if you don't know them, they are the world's largest junk removal service, doing well over $100 million in sales each year. This is not some small little company. Brian is a leader, and he used this method of expansion known as franchising in order to get where he has gotten. And for many of you that don't know, franchising is a method of distribution that accounts for well over 50% of all retail sales. It's well in excess of $1 trillion a year, and it's a great way to expand the business, but it's not for everyone. So, Brian, maybe you could talk a little bit about what got you into franchising and some of the pros and cons you have learned along the way.
So franchising to me was something that I think I got into. You know, you try and look back and you go, well, what is it about a business model that excites you? And when did it all happen that I got excited around franchising? And I think it was back to sort of my early days as a kid, always thinking McDonald's was a great business. So while most kids thought, you know, I love McDonald's and Ronald McDonald and their milkshakes and hamburgers, I looked at it and thought, I just love that no matter what city you go to, they've got this thing figured out. There's a system, it's consistent. And even as a kid, I started to get that business mind and really getting excited about McDonald's in a different way. And the more I started to read about Ray Kroc, who founded McDonald's, and his franchising system, I really thought, you know, maybe this is something I'll do one day. Not burgers, but franchise the junk removal industry. And when I figured out my model, how to really systematize my entire business, I realized, you know, this can be cookie-cuttered into other cities. If we ran the sales center for 1-800-GOT-JUNK and we did all the calls, all the booking and dispatch, our franchise partners could get out there, drive the business forward by pounding the pavement, sales and marketing, hiring and training the right teams in the trucks, and growing the business. And the model really was what got us to grow hypergrowth from $1 million to $100 million in a short 6 years.
Well,
and then I started to realize, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I started to realize that I'm not in the junk removal business. I'm not in the junk removal business at all. I'm in the franchise business and the service business. So what I started to do over the last 18 months, I started to keep my eyes peeled for another fragment mom and pop industry like junk removal, where it was just, you know, a guy in a truck, beat up old truck, fragmented industry, something that I could consolidate and brand. Like, and I thought, you know, I wonder if I will discover another one day that is as serendipitous as junk removal.
Like painting.
And it's painting. I had a house a couple years ago that I bought that I did a remodel on, and thought, okay, now that the remodel's done, I need to get this place painted. And got a couple of quotes, and one guy came in and was so professional, uniformed. He had his tablet computer and did his estimate right there and then. Everything was just clear and professional. And he said, listen, my price is as good as anyone. My quality is as good, if not better. I've done this for 22 years, and I hire great people. But I am going to have this place painted in a day. And I thought, a day? You got to be kidding me. Well, the company is called Wow One Day Painting. and that's what we do. So when my house was painted, I came home at 6:30 at night, floor to ceiling, molding trim, everything was done immaculately. I was blown away, and I thought, thank goodness this didn't disrupt my family for a week, a day. This is brilliant. And I approached Jim and said, we got a partner here. I want to buy your company. I want to merge this, and I want to franchise this business. And I think, like many entrepreneurs, we go into a second business and we say, okay, can we really take our learning and put it into something else? I don't know if I got lucky or we just had a great system, but we've been figuring this thing out. We've got 10 franchises currently. The goal is to be at 50 franchises throughout the United States and Canada by the end of this year. And we are really building a brand in an industry like junk removal that has never had a brand. And it's pretty fun doing it again. So I'm excited about Wow One Day Painting and the fit with the call center, the marketing, the PR, all the stuff we're good at. It's pretty cool to see it all really come together.
Well, listeners, one of the things that Brian is alluding to, and this method of distribution, you know, encompasses well over 80 different industries. And what great franchisors do is they bring organization to disorganized industries. And as they like to say also, that it allows for franchisees to be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. And a lot of times, listeners and people will ask me, you know, how to go into business. And for a lot of people, their instinct is to start a business. And I always tell them that if you have certain characteristics, franchising is a very good way and many times a much safer way of going into business. And Brian has clearly recognized from his homework early on. Matter of fact, if my memory is correct, there was a great book written by John Love called Behind the Golden Arches that talks about all about McDonald's. But Brian has successfully created these replicable systems and today is leading the world's largest junk removal service based out of Canada. And you can learn all about them at www.1800gotjunk.com. But Brian, I thought it would be great. I mean, you've been through it with obviously these two franchises, and there are entrepreneurs listening to this show that think they might have something to replicate. But as we both know, there's a lot of pros and cons to franchising. It is a separate business to itself, and I have no doubt you've learned a lot. So maybe you could share some of the pros and cons of franchising from the franchisor's perspective.
Great. So, Mitch, I think that there's a bit of a misnomer that one of the cons is that people go, well, I'm buying myself a job. You know, I don't want to get out there in the trucks and haul junk. I don't want to get out into one-day painting and just pick up a paintbrush and be painting all day. In our model, that's certainly not the case. What we're looking for is business builders. We're looking for people that will come in and build a team of people, a fleet of vehicles, and grow a sizable, dominant brand in their market. And many of our franchise partners go on to buy multiple cities. Our Seattle franchise partner is an example. He said, listen, I know nothing about painting. I've never even picked up a paintbrush. I said, perfect. You've got the business skills, the sales and marketing ability, which I knew this person quite well and knew he had. He's built a great business by driving the sales forward, by hiring and training the right people who are doing the painting. He's a business builder, not an operator. And so I think that's one of the biggest cons is people have to look at it and say, one of the pros is you've got the system, the recipe all worked out. Do I want to take that recipe and am I disciplined enough? Am I able to follow systems and best practices and recipes of success to put all that in place to ensure my own success? That's a pro, is the systems, the recipe. A con is some people go, I'm too entrepreneurial. I like all sorts of different ideas. I'm all over the map. I'm a little ADD. I don't necessarily want to follow a system and be told what to do. But again, one of the misnomers, something that's misunderstood in franchising, is that the franchise system isn't created most often by the franchisor, like McDonald's. It's created by the franchisees, the franchise partners. McDonald's, all the great ideas from Ronald McDonald, the Egg McMuffin, the Big Mac, whatever great things came out of that company, those were developed by the franchise partners. They were put into the system, and other franchise partners said, wow, those milkshakes you're selling when you're doing the Shamrock Shakes on St. Patty's Day, oh, brilliant idea, I'm going to put that into my location. And the system learns and gets better. So I think the pros of franchising are you can make a lot of money with the right system, you have a proven recipe, you are surrounded by other mentors within the system, so non-competing in the sense that they're in different jurisdictions, but they will give you open advice as to what's going on in their business. So a lot of pros there. Cons might be, again, if someone is stubborn, doesn't have the discipline or focus to follow a system and wants to do it their own way and thinks they know best, franchising probably isn't for you. But when I look at Craig, who runs our Seattle operation, he'll do $500,000 in revenue in his first full calendar year, and he had never picked up a paintbrush. So that's the power of franchising. I think if Craig went out and started the business from scratch on his own, things would build a lot slower.
Well, I tell you also what's really critical here, Brian, and I think you've done a really great job of articulating some of the pros and cons from the franchisee's perspective. And my question also to you is the pros and cons of being a franchisor. And the reason I ask you this question is that there's lots of companies out there that will help package entrepreneurs and take their $100,000, $200,000. And then this franchisor really doesn't know what business they got into. They're very undercapitalized. And it's not uncommon, Brian, that the business of franchising puts this company out of business. So I ask this question because I'm willing to bet you could give some really great insight. What are some of the pros and cons as it relates to being a franchisor and franchising your business?
So pros and cons to everything, right? I mean, it's the cycle of life. I mean, the sun rises, the sun sets, right? What goes up must come down. So franchising isn't perfect by any means. I love it. I would do it all again, as I've done with Wow One Day Painting. However, there are challenges. And a simple story which will illustrate one of the big differences is the lack of control that a franchisor can have over its people or its partners. So Starbucks was going through some tough times with the economy. Howard Schultz stepped back into the driver's seat and said, listen, we're going to focus more on training. He took every store on the planet, shut them down for a 2 or 3 hour period on the same day, a Tuesday, and said, we are going to train everybody, the baristas, how to make the best drink possible. They really focused on training and had everybody at the same time run through this training program. Do that in a franchise organization, good luck. Telling your franchise partners, we're going to shut down during the middle of a busy day, you're going to lose money, we're not going to cover those costs, there's no way that your franchise partners would listen. It's very difficult to rally people around something in a franchise system. In fact, Wow One Day Painting, where we have 10 franchise partners, are much more nimble and able to get things done together as a small group, as we are, on the other hand, with 1-800-GOT-JUNK, things can be a challenge in trying to move 200 franchise partners in that same powerful direction. So we have control in the sense that here's the brand, we as the franchise partner set the rules, and we control what the brand looks and feels like. But to actually put it into practice and follow the letter of the law, it can sometimes be a big challenge. So it's not for everybody. Getting into franchising as a franchise partner, franchisee, or as a franchisor, one needs to really look at pros and cons and decide, is it for them? And ultimately, why I chose franchising, and I think my leadership, our leadership, why people follow, is the same thing. We are building something much bigger together than any one of us could build alone. So the power is in the system, and we want to build something together. We want to celebrate together, and that's what's exciting.
Well, it is exciting, and as we know, you know, and as you've discussed here, there's a lot of advantages, including obviously from the franchisor's perspective or the entrepreneur's perspective, and that's the ability to expand more rapidly and use the working capital and the hard work of these franchisees. And the franchisees, you know, when they get into a good system, they get one that works, they get a lot of economies of scale, and that's why franchising accounts for over 50% of all retail sales. It is a great method of expansion, and there's no shortage of information out there to learn from. You could go to the International Franchise Association website, and they have all kinds of information and access to resources and books, and that will help you as well. But, Brian, one thing I thought that you also could really help our listeners on. And as I mentioned, franchising encompasses over 80 different industries. And maybe you could give some tips to our listeners that are really intrigued by this, that say, you know what, I want to go into business, and I don't know a lot about franchising, but this is really interesting. You know, what should they do in order to, you know, to find what I will call the best or the best fit for them in order to purchase a franchise?
Pretty simple, Mitch. I think I would recommend as a starting point, people go to their internet, you know, go to Google and search how to buy a franchise. Pros, cons, boom, put that in. I bet there will be a ton of documentation, great articles as to why franchising, why not. I've shared my opinions today, and by no means are they all right. They're my own opinions, and everyone's got their own. I love franchising, would absolutely choose it again because of the power of the system, people working together. But I think it's something that someone needs to look at, and there's several questions I would ask is, what am I passionate about doing? Am I passionate about building a business, or is there a specific business I'm passionate about? In my case, it doesn't matter whether it's painting, junk removal. I'm in the service business, and I know we can deliver wow at every step of the way. So I've chosen to franchise service businesses. One day maybe we'll be in the moving business. Who knows? Now, the other question I think someone has to look at is not just what type of business, but franchise or not. They've got to look at pros and cons. And it really is sitting down with a pen and paper and really drawing out just a pros list on the left, cons list on the right, and really understand what you know the decision point is and make a decision. But my franchise partners who have chosen any one of our brands, I think they're pleased because, again, the support. You had mentioned it, which is a classic franchise line. You're in business for yourself, not by yourself. Some people prefer to be by themselves. And as you and I both know with our years of entrepreneurial experience, that being by ourselves is often a lonely thing. I mean, it's lonely at the top. And when it comes down to the day that you've got to fire all 11 people, who's left? Well, just me manning the phones, me manning the trucks, me running the business, trying to painfully build everything back up. It's a challenge. But I got to say the rewards of running a business are most enjoyable when I'm surrounded by great people, which are our franchise partners.
Well, as we also know, Brian, there's nothing like your own little annual convention and seeing all those people out there that you've helped make successful. And my experience, as you have articulated as well, is those entrepreneurs who are extremely entrepreneurial don't make good franchisees. And the only time, Brian, I've seen them actually do that is those that own multiple units. And I'm not saying all the time, but that tends to be a tendency that they actually end up being pretty good here. But in starting to wrap up here, Brian, I thought one of the things that might be really interesting, and it's obvious you've got a really unique culture there. It is not luck that you keep winning the Best Company to Work For award. Maybe you could talk a little bit about, you know, how do you really build a good culture that really sustains your business?
To me, culture goes back to that same question of, or motto / statement that we have up on our wall at the Junction, our head office. It's all about people. Culture is finding the right people, plain and simple. So, If I take an example, how do we find friends? You know, we don't go to a checklist and go, well, Mitch, you're not only a great looking guy, but you're lots of fun and we love, you know, the same football team. And hey, yeah, check. I want you to be my friend. You know, you and I meet, we either connect or we don't. And I decide, you decide, you know what, this just works and it happens. And with hiring great people, recruiting great people, I suggest that people do the same thing. Just like you pick your friends, don't compromise. I compromise in choosing you as a friend or you in choosing me and it doesn't work out, yeah, we just kind of move on and that's it. But when you bring an employee into your organization, if you've made the wrong hire, it's expensive, it's painful for everybody. We know, just like when we're choosing friends, we know in our gut, have we picked the right people or not? And all too often, and this was my biggest mistake in the past, I still make plenty of mistakes today, but this was one of the big ones in the past, was compromising, going, you know what, I think that person's good enough. I need someone to drive the revenue forward in that area. This biz dev person, it's going to work out just fine. Well, you know what, good enough isn't good enough. They need to be the right person and the perfect fit for what you're looking for. I just recently recruited a COO, and it took me almost a year to find the right person. I went through 400 candidates, interviewed 70 personally, and it was a tough go, but you know what? I got the right person, and things fit.
You might want to book him for an upcoming conference, speaking. I have no doubt that he will help change you and your life and your business as well, because he knows what he's doing. He's done it. And as you heard today, he's not afraid to share. And one of the things you don't also know, Mark, is I coined the term a long time ago called OPE. We all know about OPM, other people's money. And I was talking about other people's experiences. And that is at the forefront of why we do the show, is to share your journey and let our listeners learn from you. So hopefully you enjoyed yourself today.
You do a great thing. Congratulations for what you're doing for entrepreneurs. You are making a difference. Congratulations.
Well, Mark, I really appreciate it. And I'll be in touch with you, buddy. And I look forward to getting to know you as well.
It was a pleasure chatting with you today.
Okay. Again, listeners, go to www.markmoses.net. He is really a marvelous, marvelous entrepreneur, as I obviously alluded to. Again, you're listening to Let's Talk Business right here on WREK 91.1 on your FM dial. As I like to say, 100,000 watts. And I always love my featured guests. And my second featured guest actually is joining us here from Atlanta. And it is none other than Sanjay Parekh. And if you want to know about him, first of all, he actually graduated from Georgia Tech. And actually has done some amazing things. Today he's the founder of Startup Riot, which is a day-long conference and career fair event held in multiple cities. And he's also a co-founding partner of Shot Put Ventures, which is actually a seed stage investment firm. He's done a lot of things, including he was the founder of Digital Envoy and many, many other things. We could list them all out here, but the fact of the matter is he's also the real deal. He's got a lot of patents, and he loves to help entrepreneurs. Sanjay, welcome to Let's Talk Business.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
How you doing, buddy?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Good. Hopefully you're enjoying yourself, and we've got a whole half hour here, and I'm looking forward to learning from you, and I know my listeners are as well. I know that, you know, as we both know, you got your electrical engineering degree from Georgia Tech here, and which is a marvelous, marvelous school, and then you went on to get your MBA from Emory University, the Gazzetta Business School. So why don't you talk a little bit about, and as I'd like to start off with my guests, about you and your journey. I always find it fascinating, you know, from a kid on, how you get where you get. So let's start off and talk a little bit about your journey and how it led you to Startup Riot.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's funny. So, you know, if you think about, for me, my journey started actually when I was a kid. And so, you know, my first entrepreneurial experience was doing, and I don't know if you remember this, but back in the day in comic books, they used to have this paper that said, you know, hey, kids, you know, do you want to make money or something like that? They didn't really tell you what you were going to do. But I filled out that form and sent it in and discovered that I had just signed up to become a door-to-door salesperson for custom imprinted holiday cards. So that was actually my first gig selling door-to-door, you know, door-to-door sales of holiday cards. And I tell you what, it's a shame, actually, that door-to-door sales isn't kind of as safe of a thing to do now, but I learned so much about selling during that experience. So I had probably about 400 to 500 houses that I sold to you know, made money doing these holiday cards. And so I had to deal with the whole process of getting orders and getting people to sign up and pay money to a kid, and they weren't sure, you know, if they were actually going to get product at the end of it. And then, you know, a couple of months later, you know, organize all the products that I got back in the mail and deliver them and everything. So that was kind of my first entrepreneurial experience. And then, you know, kind of later on down the line, after getting out of Georgia Tech in 96, I went to work for an early stage company. It was a joint venture, so it wasn't venture funded or anything, but I was about employee number 20 there. And then traveled around quite a bit. And the company's still around. They're a public company now. It's called Aeris up in Suwanee, Georgia. And so spent some time there, and that's during my time there, that's when I came up with the idea to start up Digital Envoy. and do IP-based location. And so that was in 99, March 99, when I came up with that idea. And I went full-time in 2000. And so during the next few years for that, ended up raising about $12 million in venture capital and angel money for the company. I left in 05 to take a break from working, and that's when I did my MBA over at Emory, and then stayed on the board until we exited, which was in 2007. And then that led into, in 2008, to start up Riot as a way of giving back and helping out other entrepreneurs. And so, you know, next month will be 5 years for that event here in Atlanta. Last year we branched out the event, and we now do the day-long event in Seattle as well. And then this year last year we started up a career fair event to go along with the main event, but this year we expanded that event to be in D.C. as well, Washington, D.C., and we're looking to expand that to other cities on top of that. So that's basically what's been going on. You know, a lot of other side things, as you mentioned, you know, like ShotPut Ventures, which is an early seed stage investment fund here in Atlanta. And now we're actually a part of Flashpoint Ventures, which is at Georgia Tech, that just recently graduated their first, I want to say 16 startups out of that incubator, and they'll do another class of startups this summer.
Well, I tell you, there's really some great stuff going on here at Georgia Tech, as you and I know, and all the things going on at the ATDC, and we could do a whole show on that, and maybe we will do that. But, you know, one of the things that I was talking earlier with my first featured guest, Mark Moses, and, you know, you are the Beast, and you know the Beast well, and you work with them, and that is the entrepreneur. And I'm curious, you know, from your take on things, you know, what do you think an entrepreneur is, and do you think they're born or made?
That's a good question. I know Mark didn't have a definite answer to that either. You know, I think it can be either, actually. I think a lot of entrepreneurs are made, or rather born, but a lot of entrepreneurs are made. And either way, I think once you get the bug, that's it. You're set, right? You're kind of spoiled for life at that point. You can't go back to working for other people. Clearly, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs that I know and you know do work for other people, you know, when their businesses are acquired. But those things aren't lifelong, it seems like. I mean, time and time again, I've seen it where that'll happen and they'll get the itch after a few years and they just got to leave and do their own thing. So I don't know that it's definitely one or the other. I think there's a lot of things that kind of revolve around that mindset. Like for me, I think maybe I was more born an entrepreneur because I started so early. But there's definitely a lot of folks that come later in life, and I think those are made.
Well, I tell you, it's an interesting time to be an entrepreneur. And if there's anyone out there that really knows the journey, especially of the startup, it's you. And my listeners from all over, many are seasoned entrepreneurs and CEOs, and many are would-be entrepreneurs, and especially our youth. And, you know, maybe you could take us through here, Sanjay, the startup itself. You know, what it's really, really like. Not what you read in a book, but what it's really like.
Yeah, I mean, it you know, it's funny because I guess in the books and in the movies, you see like one of the two ends of the spectrum, right? You see the ridiculously awesome, you know, very hyper successful startup, or you see the startup where the founder just made so many stupid mistakes and it was a spectacular failure. But I think those are the edge cases, really. I think the reality is somewhere in the middle. And honestly, there's just so many highs and so many lows to it that it's not like a normal thing to subject yourself to. You know, I think as entrepreneurs, we're just a little off kilter from everybody else to be, you know, masochistic enough to expose ourselves to this kind of swings in kind of happiness and sadness almost on a day-to-day basis. So that is, I think, the thing that you never read about or you never see because, you know, people don't really care about kind of the day-to-day stuff. They care about, you know, reveling in the massive success or the spectacular failure.
One of the things that you've brought up here and in your own way, and that is they also don't really know many times, as we both know, the isolation and loneliness that accompanies the entrepreneurial journey. And Mark Moses was talking about EO and Vistage and no shortage of groups out there to join. But maybe you could talk a little bit about Lunch Chaos and excuse me, maybe talk a little bit about Lunch Chaos.
The Lunch Chaos that we do at Startup Riot?
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, we do some things that are a little bit different with Startup Riot because, you know, our kind of main driving purpose with that event is not to maximize profit. You know, the reason I started that event was actually to give back and help out others. So we started looking at kind of the makeup of a conference and what really does make sense and doesn't make sense. And, you know, if you look at most conferences, they charge hundreds of dollars to attend. If not, you know, some of them are $1,000 plus. And that just never made sense to me, right? So we try to keep our costs low. So, you know, for presenters, obviously, we're free because pay-to-pitch is just kind of pure evil. And everybody else is $30 to $70 is the price right now going. You know, it might go up in the future a little bit, but I can't see it going up dramatically. So with that, you know, one of the things that sticks out that you end up paying for with those tickets is the food, right? And you think about having to serve food for, you know, we're going to be north of 500 attendees next month. So 500 meals all at the same time. You know, that adage of good, fast, or cheap, you know, pick two. And so inevitably what you get is you get fast food that's expensive and nobody enjoys it. It's just kind of crappy. So what we do is a very chaotic kind of matching exercise where people go to lunch with people they don't know, and they go to local restaurants. And so in that way, we're supporting the entrepreneurs that are doing those things locally, that are running restaurants. You know, we bring in Atlanta, we started getting all these food trucks, so we bring those in too. And, you know, the main point being is that the attendees can then decide if they want to spend a couple of bucks on lunch or if they want to spend $100 on lunch. I don't have to be the one deciding that, and they can decide the quality of the meal and the expense of the meal on their own.
Well, I tell you, it's some really innovative thinking, and I really admire the fact that, you know, you are giving back and allows you to see a lot of deals, as we both know, and it's good for deal flow, and hopefully you'll help some, and you'll eventually, you know, maybe make a buck two or there, and that's okay as well, as that's kind of how the process works. But I also thought, and I mentioned earlier today, that today's show is all about thinking, acting, and dreaming big. And as you mentioned early on, you know, a company you work for, over $1 billion in sales that you did, and so on and so forth. Maybe you could talk a little bit about, you know, thinking and acting and dreaming big, and how to really do something that matters.
Sorry, I missed that last part there.
Yeah, what I was asking you was today I dedicated our entire show to thinking, acting, and dreaming big. And as you talked about early on, you know, you worked for that company and, you know, a lot of sales there, you know, billion plus. And I was curious, you know, maybe you could share from us, from all you've seen and you've experienced, how to think and act and dream big.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, it's been just being open to the possibility, right? I mean, the idea for Digital Envoy came when I hit two websites, the FedEx and IKEA website, and the first thing they ask you, and actually I think to this day they ask you, is what country are you in? And that's before they show you any content. Now, if you're not kind of thinking about, you know, why is that, and why is that, you know, why are they doing this, I totally would have missed that opportunity. And so I think everybody has it in them to discover these things, because every day that we walk around, right, there are things that annoy each one of us. There are things that we, each of us, think, at least for a second, man, that should be better. And that could be, you know, as simple as, you know, interacting with kind of day-to-day things in the store or on the street, or something that you see online. You know, why is it the way that it is? Why is it not better? How can we do this better? And that's, I think, when you get that opportunity to think big and dream big. And I'll tell you honestly, you know, working up to the idea that ended up being Digital Envoy, there were multiple ideas before then that I thought about that I wanted to work on. And you go down the path a little bit and you're like, this is just not going to do it, right? This is just, it's not that interesting of a problem. Nobody else cares. It's just not a big enough marketplace. You know, or maybe I'm the only one that cares. You know, this problem doesn't bother anybody else. But, you know, I think if you do it enough times, you eventually come to the point where you do find that problem that, that needs to be solved, that everybody else is having that same problem, but nobody is willing to actually solve the problem. And so, you know, somebody's got to do it, and why not you?
I think it's some great advice. And matter of fact, one of the things that, you know, that you said is and, you know, it really falls in that simple bucket of find the need and fill it. And as you said, find the big enough need, and the rest can be history. But as we both know, the journey can be challenging. And I thought maybe you could talk a little bit about, you know, as you said, you took a break, you know, and maybe, and I know you speak about this, maybe talk a little bit about success through failure.
Yeah, I mean, well, I, honestly, failure is probably the biggest way of learning. Because the problem is with a lot of people, and I won't just say entrepreneurs, but just people in general, is that when you do succeed, you know, as people, we have this tendency to think, well, you know, that was because I'm so smart, right? I'm successful because I'm just the best. And I think in most cases, that's probably not true, right? There's a lot of luck involved in succeeding. And so a lot of times that failure, if you're willing to kind of accept the failure and not blame failure on others and look at it critically and say, you know, why did I fail? I think it ends up teaching you a lot. And sometimes you're right. You know, I think sometimes you need to take a break from stuff. If you're so focused on something, it's hard to see the forest for the trees because you've got that kind of tunnel vision and you can't see the issues that you're facing. And sometimes when you do take that step back, you can come up with a more elegant solution or a bigger problem to attack that solves the issues that you're having as well as other issues that other folks are having.
Again, listeners, if you're just tuning in, you're listening right here on 91.1 on your FM dial. And we're talking with Sanjay Parekh and all the way here in beautiful Atlanta where he attended Georgia Tech. And he's really built not only some nice businesses, but more importantly, he's helping a lot of entrepreneurs with his latest venture, Startup Riot. Go to his website as well. www.startupriot.com. And I know that, and as we both know, and you mentioned it earlier, is raising money for your business. And, you know, we'll call it, you know, pitching 200 VCs in 10 months until you close around. Maybe you could talk a little bit about not only that experience for you, Sanjay, but more importantly, some of the keys to actually getting investors to fund in your dream.
Yeah. So, the time that I did that raise was an interesting time. So it was during the first bubble days, .com bubble days, and it was painful, honestly. You know, so you know, we came to a point in time where we had term sheets and signed one, and that one got pulled because the funder didn't have money to actually execute the term sheet, and so we had to start all over again. I mean, raising money is a marathon process, and it's a lot about relationships. And I'm happy to say that a lot of the people that I pitched to, you know, some of those 200, I still talk to this day. And, you know, I've been leveraging those relationships for Startup Riot now in that the prize packages that we put together for the winners involves a lot of the folks that I pitched to many, many years ago. Last year, we're working on this year's prize packages because the event's coming up next month. But last year, we had 17 30-minute meetings guaranteed for the top winner of the Atlanta event. So 8.5 hours of meetings. So you're a starting entrepreneur, and you don't have those contacts. This is, I mean, such a fabulous way to get those relationships started. And obviously, you're not going to raise money on that first call, that first 30-minute call. But that first conversation is kind of that important first step to start going down that path. And the reason I did that is because, honestly, there was nothing like that for me when I started. And so, you know, my philosophy with Startup Riot has always been, you know, let me look at the things that weren't around for me and see how I can fix them. And fundraising is kind of a necessary part of that. Now, a lot of people bootstrap, and more power to them. If you can bootstrap it, I think, you know, the less time you can spend pitching and trying to raise money, the better. Because honestly, it's not a value add to your business. You're just kind of moving around dollars from an investor's pocket into your pocket, but it doesn't actually create value in your business. You know, working on your business is what creates value. And that's why, you know, thinking about that 10 months and 200 VCs, I talk about that story a lot because I think you need to be really certain that you want to raise money and that you're ready to raise money, because it can take a long time. And that time that I spent raising that money with the other co-founders, you know, means that those 10 months, we didn't really build on our business as quickly as we could have. In the end, it was great for us because we closed our round in July 2001, and then a few months later, 9/11 happened, and you know, nobody got funded for probably the better part of a year here in Atlanta. And so that money really helped us kind of go through that recession and be able to survive through all that. And so had we raised less or had we not raised money, it would have been a lot more difficult.
Well, one thing I thought, and again, you know, you did it, and you see it every day. Maybe just give us, you know, a few tips on how to successfully pitch investors. They're very busy. Give us some tips that you say, God, I wish I knew this before.
Yeah. You know, I think it's, you got to kind of drive to the point. You know, entrepreneurs, especially engineers, and I say this as an engineer, you want to discuss like every bell and whistle on the thing that you're developing. And honestly, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, especially in the first meeting, right? The entrepreneurs and engineers have this, like, I don't know, innate thing of where we want to talk about and explain everything, all this minutia. And I think it's because we love technology and we love those gadgets. And we feel like, you know, if I love it, then they should love it. And that's not necessarily the case. You know, you got to really understand your audience. And the point of having that first conversation is not about selling them and getting them to write a check, because they're not going to. The point of that first conversation is to get a second conversation. And so if you can interest them enough to get to them to that point to say, you know, a week later or a couple of weeks later, hey, yeah, let's talk again because this is interesting and we want to follow up, you were successful then in that first meeting. But if you never get that second meeting, then you know you failed miserably in that first meeting.
Well, some great tips, and as you and I both know also in that first meeting, you know, you're just trying to get them to know you and yes, like you, you know, in the end, a large part of that investment is in you and your management, and seasoned investors know, you know, with the greatest plans and your pedigree, so on and so forth, you know, only a few of them really hit. But again, listeners, go to his website. I'm telling you, if you're an entrepreneur, especially one that wants to start a business, you want to go to his events. Go to his website, www.startupriot.com. You'll learn all about his different programs, his Make program, his Join program. And I know February 22nd is going to be your Startup Riot show. Maybe talk just briefly about that, Sanjay.
Yeah, absolutely. So, so the 22nd of February is the main event. We've got a career fair event the day before, as well as a hackathon before that. But the main event, we're going to have 30 entrepreneurs get up on stage for 3 minutes to present 4 slides in front of a large audience. One winner from that will be picked. There will be a judging panel that will pick the top 5 out of the 30, and then the audience will pick the top 3 out of those 5. The top winner will get at least $10,000 in investment in terms of a convertible debt note. And then, as I said, introductions to investors. Right now it's only, I think it's 2 hours worth, so 4 meetings. But we're going to be beefing that up pretty quickly and hopefully surpassing last year's 8.5 hours worth, 17 meetings worth soon enough. The one thing that's different about the event, you know, we talked about kind of the price points, is that we screen all the attendees. So we screen out all the service providers. So the lawyers, the accountants, the recruiters, the consultants, anybody that provides services to this community is screened out. So it's only entrepreneurs, investors, corporate folks that buy startups or buy from startups, and then those that support entrepreneurship, so incubators and folks like that. And then obviously the sponsors. And some of our sponsors are obviously service providers, but they've been vetted and they're not ones that are disruptive, let's say. And so, you know, the event ends up being really, really a great event because you get to meet the people that you want to meet. And we don't just focus on Atlanta or Georgia startups. We've got people flying in from all over. Last year we had a Australian startup and a European startup present. You know, this year we've got people from Eastern Europe flying in just to attend the event. So they're definitely the people that you want to meet. And, you know, it's an all-day event. We go from about 8:30 in the morning until 5 in the evening, and then we have an after party that runs from 5 to 7. So it's a day long plus event, and a lot of fun. At least I think so. I don't know. I end up working for the day, so everybody else tells me it's a lot of fun. You know, I usually, I think, end up enjoying the after party, but that's about it.
Well, I think you also get enjoyment that, and as you said, you founded this in 2008, so it starts to happen, and that is some of them get funded, and eventually one of them is really going to do something big, and you're going to say, you know, my DNA is in there, or whether you have equity or not. But I have to tell you, my hat is off to you. I love entrepreneurs that see needs, fill them, and more importantly, come up with models that actually come back and help entrepreneurs, and you're doing that. Real quickly here, as I mentioned, you have a lot of patents, you know. Obviously, technology is important to you. Maybe just talk real quick on how to use technology to really grow a business.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you got to find the right tool for the right job. So we use a lot of different services from like WooFoo Forms to FreshBooks to kind of manage everything that we do. You know, we're starting to get to the point where we're growing the business that we need to start automating a lot of the things that we do on the back end. A lot of it is just kind of manual processes. And so we're going to start looking to kind of automate some of the things that we do and actually package them in such a way that we can help other people that want to do similar things as us in terms of Startup Ride and everything. I mean, technology is obviously kind of a key driver for a lot of businesses. I think you have to look at the opportunities out there and see what's available to see, you know, what you can automate. You know, if you can drop down your kind of manual costs, and it's not overly expensive, or it's going to save you a lot of money, and so then it's okay if it's overly expensive. It's obviously the thing to do, and that's the opportunities that we always look for.
Real quickly, you look back on your journey, and you sit here today, and in sitting here today, what do you wish you knew when you started out? You said, God, I wish I knew that.
Gosh. You know, I wish I'd known to maybe make the jump earlier. You know, my time with the company that I worked for out of college was a good time, and I learned a lot, and it actually prepped me for Digital Envoy. So I don't know if switching that out would have been a good decision, but, I feel like now, man, I'd wish I'd started up Digital Envoy even earlier, you know, or wish I'd started up something else or even earlier. You know, a lot of people think about us as entrepreneurs and that are not entrepreneurs and think about the risk that we're taking. Honestly, in anything that you do, there's risk, right? You work for somebody else, there's risk. So don't be afraid of the risk.
Well, I've also learned that the great entrepreneurs eventually take calculated risks. They get much better at this, whether you want to call it science or art. But it's a glorious, glorious life. Sanjay, as you and I both know, and freedom is such an important part of it, and it's nice to do things that really matter and to really help people. And it's funny you were talking about starting sooner. As I mentioned earlier, we have a foundation for kids called the Magic Wand Foundation, and we teach them a lot of mindsets, including seven mindsets, including the time is now and how it's important to get started. Matter of fact, there's a new book out that I highly recommend to everyone called The Seven Mindsets to Live Your Ultimate Life. It's an unexpected blueprint for an extraordinary life. Go out and get the book. Scott Schickler and Jeff Waller are its authors. And I tell you, it's based on some groundbreaking research. And I know you're going to love that book. It's something that's really, really special. Well, I tell you what, Sanjay, I never know where the time goes here. And I'm so glad that we had a chance to hook up here. And hopefully you really enjoyed yourself today.
Yeah, absolutely. And kudos to you for doing what you're doing and talking about all these things. I'm sure it's helping folks out there. So you should feel proud about, you know, doing this each and every week.
Well, I don't do this alone. I've got great people here at WREK that believe in this show and have made this a home for me. And we look forward every week to bringing some of the greatest entrepreneurs on this show. So thanks for joining us, and I look forward to meeting you soon.
Absolutely. Go Jackets.
All right. Again, listeners, go to his website, www.startupriot.com, and go to his event if you're an entrepreneur, if you can get in. But I tell you, he is making a big difference out there. And as I kind of alluded to, it takes a lot of people to make this show and everything we do so successful. I want to thank, of course, everyone at our Ultimate Life Institute, Accent, our Magic Wand Foundation, and, of course, the Let's Talk Business Network. And our epicenter, many of you have heard this, we're building an epicenter for entrepreneurship, which is going to be the home of the Entrepreneur Hall of Fame, which I founded over 10 years ago. But this show is due to the people here at WREK. I want to thank, of course, Jonathan Walker for all of his help. I want to thank Grace and Cody and everyone else. And one thing I can tell you is that each and every week we're going to help you along the way. You're going to learn from the journey of these people. If you ever want some support and help, always feel free to send the email to Mitch at LTBN.com. That's Mitch at LTBN.com.